Chapter 9. The war in Europe had ended, and it was clear to everyone the war with Japan could not go on much longer. Harry was still struggling to earn money selling furniture. He told the owner he was considering leaving the business and starting another. His plan was to sell surplus uniforms and military equipment on credit. The military was selling it off cheaply. He was sure people would want souvenirs from the war. The newsreels he'd seen about the concentration camps made Harry's blood boil. He hoped the girls hadn't seen them too, and worried what they would think seeing mounds of naked Jewish corpses. Harry cursed the luck that had made him too young to fight the Kaiser in World War I and too old to fight the Nazis in World War II. Perhaps if he had been a soldier, his life would have taken a different path, or he would not have survived to have the problems he had. By August 1945, Harry was working hard managing the new Army-Navy store, receiving and inventorying canteens, blankets, binoculars, medals, and even uniforms straight from Iwo Jima, which still had bloodstains. Pricing the goods was challenging. If he could begin to make money, maybe Rose would come home and never leave again. He wrote to her and the girls when he could afford postage and called whenever he could get a line to Bob's house or Max's. Rose rarely picked up the phone. He spoke with Natty when she was living with Bob and Sadie, but had a hard time reaching her at Sam and Gazella's. They could afford a phone, but were unaccustomed to telephones, preferring to work in person with their customers. Harry attended Friday night services in the shul down the street in the opposite direction from Silver Rod's and the trolley depot. He took some solace from meeting longtime friends who were also down on their luck. Like them, he prayed for the rest of the war to end and his family's future health and prosperity. When he was home, Harry sat in his chair in the dark eating pancakes with syrup or whatever Seal handed him through the air shaft. One evening, he saw the local doctor through the air shaft in Seal and Nathan's living room, tending Sophie, who was lying on a cot. Harry walked around and knocked on the front door. "Hello, Nathan," he said. "Everything okay? Can I be of any help?" "Thanks, Harry. Sophie's sick. The doctor's here now. I'll let you know. Thanks for asking." Nathan turned away quickly to go back to Sophie. Harry went home. He was not one to pry, but cared about his neighbors, the only people who'd gone out of their way to look after him when his own wife had not. As the summer waned, so did Sophie. Harry noticed a nurse wearing a starched white uniform and cap like Rose wore, going in and out of his neighbor's house. Once a week, he checked in with Nathan to see if he could help. By Labor Day, September 3rd, the day after the end of the war with Japan, Sophie was gone. Harry could hear wailing and screaming as the shiva began. He joined them. She was a young woman who died too soon. He wondered if he would share her fate. It was late fall in Cleveland when Rose prepared to wander the state again and perhaps go to Chicago with Abby. She invited her cousin Abe, recently discharged from the Army, his young wife Florence, and baby Manny to move into their Cleveland apartment and supervise Natty, now 12. Florence and Manny had lived with Abe's parents while Abe was away, but it was time they moved out. Abe had saved some money for a place of their own, but didn't have enough. He said he hoped to go back to school and find a job. Abe, Florence, and Manny moved into Rose's room. Natty would sleep on the fold-out couch. Rose was thrilled when Abe brought her silk stockings on the day of their arrival. Natty nonetheless hated living with Abe and Florence, but she enjoyed the baby when he wasn't crying. After Abby left, her nights finally became quiet again. Now the baby took Abby's place. It sometimes seemed like she wasn't meant to sleep at all. Abe was gone a lot, looking for work during the day and taking classes at night. Florence took over the apartment. She constantly scolded Natty for little things, not making up the sofa bed before she went to school, or failing to clean the apartment to Florence's standards. Florence pretended she loved Natty, treating her to candy and hugging her when Abe was home on the weekends, or when Natty's grandparents popped in to say hello. But it was Florence who begrudgingly explained to Natty that she was not dying when her first period came. Natty cried for her mother. Grandma and Grandpa often invited her for dinner so she could get a break and peruse the latest fashions in their magazines. Despite their best efforts, Natty couldn't learn to sew. Being left-handed made it difficult, but she had little interest in making clothes. A teacher back in Brooklyn had made a habit of slapping her left hand with a ruler whenever she wrote or drew with it, until her father had confronted the woman and told her to leave his daughter alone. Uncle Izzy and Aunt Gladys also took Natty in for visits and meals. She spent a lot of her free time there doing homework. She missed the old couch in the Brownsville living room. Meanwhile, Mother and Abby came and went throughout the year. They traveled by train and bus, using money provided by Uncle Bob or Uncle Max. While away, Mother and Abby stayed in rundown motels. Maybe, thought Natty, Mother would rather spend the money on clothes or nights out at the Casablanca Cafe than in a nice hotel room. The end of the war brought an almost frantic interest in military paraphernalia. There were a lot of curiosity seekers. Some told Harry they wanted to purchase items they thought would increase in value. Others wanted items covered in blood or from the enemy. Harry hid his disgust while thanking heaven for morbid curiosity. He decided he had enough money to go to Cleveland on the Lackawanna Railroad. It was 8 months since the war ended, and the Army-Navy surplus store was doing well enough for him to hire a part-time assistant. Maury, a disabled veteran, said he was happy to cover Harry's few days away. Harry traveled in the spring. He had 8 hours on the train to imagine his visit with Rose. He couldn't compete with the brothers, but he finally had some money of his own. His health had become worse, but he knew his loneliness and unhappiness were partly to blame. He debated with himself about the best approach, whether to confront Rose so she'd see how her absence had affected him, or pretend all was well so she'd be more likely to return home. In the end, he admitted to himself he was a pushover, just as Bob had figured back in 1930. Harry knew he was probably too easygoing, allowing people like Bob and Rose to take advantage of him. Even at the store, people asked him if they could pay him later. He never refused. Many he never saw again, but he kept allowing it because he knew what it was like to want something and not be able to pay for it. Izzy picked Harry up from the train. Harry liked Izzy, although he didn't like to be around Max or Bob any more than necessary. Izzy helped him carry in his luggage and the presents he'd brought. They'd stopped along the way so Harry could buy some red roses for Rose. At the apartment, Izzy gave a quick wave to Rose, leaving Harry to her like Daniel in the lion's den. Harry guessed that Izzy and his brothers knew all about their failing marriage. She'd probably told them everything. He'd planned to arrive while the girls were in school so he and Rose could have some time alone to talk. He'd splurged on a new suit at Abraham and Strauss for the occasion. He would have liked a new hat, but thought better of the expense. Rose saw a large man with a puffy face under his old brown fedora, wearing a navy blue pinstripe suit she knew was off the rack. He was carrying a small bouquet of red roses. "Roses for my Rose," said Harry with a big smile, taking off his hat with one hand while extending the flowers with the other. "Harry," said Rose tentatively from the other side of the threshold, taking the roses and sniffing them. She allowed herself to be held briefly in his embrace, grateful the bouquet prevented them from getting too close. She opened the door wide and turned away to get a vase from the kitchen. She had known he was coming, but wore the simple house dress she put on for cooking and cleaning. "It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon," Harry thought. "Is she ill?" Harry picked up his carpet bag and the canvas bag of gifts and followed Rose. He looked around the apartment. It was small, but sunny. He poked his head down the short hallway and spotted one bedroom and one bathroom. Rose came back with the roses in a tall water glass. She placed the makeshift vase on top of the cedar chest that served as a coffee table and returned to the kitchen to get 2 cups of coffee. Then she sat on the couch. Harry stood in the middle of the room, unsure what to do. He hadn't yet taken his raincoat off, so he did that next. It had been raining when he left Brooklyn early that morning. "Can I get you something to eat? You must be starving." "Or we can have a snack with the girls. They'll be home soon," said Rose in a matter-of-fact tone, as if she was talking with a neighbor who had stopped by to chat. Harry thought back to his resolution on the train. He dropped the bags, threw his hat and coat on a side chair, and sat down close to Rose. "Rose, I couldn't wait any longer. You've been away so long," he said, softly placing his arm around her and drawing her close. Rose kissed him back with more fervor than before. She embraced him with tenderness, but he could feel it was the same kind she had for neighbors and patients. She could radiate warmth for an unhappy stranger, but not for a man she supposedly loved. "The girls can't wait to see you," she said, drawing back from him while reaching for her coffee cup. "It's all they've talked about since you wrote you were coming. Isn't Bob wonderful, paying for your ticket and all? He's been so good to me. You know, his nightclub is doing so well." "Oh, let's go there, Harry, one night while you're here. It's been so long since we danced together. Wouldn't that be fun?" Harry stood and turned to look at his wife. "Rose, we haven't seen each other for more than 2 years. I've missed you. Haven't you missed me? I want us to talk. I don't have much time before I have to return to the store. I want you and the girls to come home, Rose. Anyway, I didn't use Bob's money. I brought it to give it back to him. I bought my own train ticket. I won't take anything from Bob." He'd promised himself he wouldn't confront her, but he felt like a stranger. He wanted her to prove him wrong. "Of course I've missed you, Harry. But the girls will be home soon. I don't want to get into all that now. We'll have plenty of time to talk." She picked up the coffee cups and saucers and started for the tiny kitchen. Harry watched her slim, beautiful legs that even a dingy house coat couldn't diminish. He sat back down, put his head back, and closed his eyes. Rose stayed in the kitchen making puttering noises. The girls returned from school, shattering the silence. Harry put aside his discomfort with Rose to greet his children with long, loving bear hugs. Abby was in the door first and ran to him, much to his surprise and pleasure. Her hug was tight and genuinely affectionate, but quick, as if she were afraid something would go wrong. Natty hugged him till they started laughing and tickling each other, too out of breath to speak. The girls both spoke at once so fast he hardly understood a word, but simply basked in their joy. It almost made up for Rose's apathy. "How long can you stay, Daddy?" asked Natty when they sat down to eat a supper of white fish and salad. Rose had no kosher sink in Cleveland, but she'd made sure to buy food Harry would eat. "Only a few days, honey. I hope you'll be coming home soon," he said, addressing this to Natty and Abby sitting across from him, while glancing over at Rose with a hopeful wink. "I brought a book for each of you and some new handkerchiefs. Seal picked them out for me. I'll show you after supper." That evening, after the girls went to bed in the bedroom where Rose usually slept, Harry tried again. "Can we talk, Rose? I want you to come home." "I'm tired, Harry. I cleaned the apartment for you and went shopping for food you'd like. Let's talk another time. I think you'll be comfortable if we push the two stuffed chairs together. Or you can sleep on the sofa bed and I'll sleep on the chairs. The girls usually sleep on the sofa bed, but it's not big enough for both of us," said Rose, talking as she withdrew sheets and blankets from the cedar chest. Harry stood still. Nothing had gone as he'd hoped. Every time they were alone and Rose spoke to him, he felt their estrangement grow stronger, as if it had a life of its own. "Whatever you want, Rose. I'll sleep on the chairs," he acquiesced, deciding it best to give it up for the night. Rose went into the bathroom to prepare for bed. She came out wearing a lighter weight house coat instead of a nightgown. She got into bed, leaving him to prepare himself in the chairs for sleep. "Turn off the lights, please, Harry," she said before turning on her side away from him. She didn't fall asleep, although he thought she did. She lay awake for hours thinking about going home. Rose had been unsuccessful in finding a cure for Abby during the almost 3 years since she and the girls left Brooklyn. If anything, Abby's mental health was worse. The specialists in Ohio had advised insulin therapy and shock treatments. Rose adamantly refused, considering them barbaric and ineffective. She could only hold him off so long, and she was no closer to knowing what she wanted for herself, other than to not be poor. She knew Harry would be angry if she told him about Abby. He would say the years in Cleveland had been a big waste of time and complain of being deprived of her and the children for nothing. He was not someone easily distracted. If he didn't want to go to the Casablanca, she'd make sure to keep him so busy he wouldn't know what hit him until it was time to get on the train back to Brooklyn. Harry left early on Sunday. Izzy dropped him off with only his carpet bag. Harry had folded his new suit, placing it neatly in the large bag on top of his good shoes. Yesterday, he'd worn the suit with a different shirt and tie to escort Rose and the girls to Sabbath services, and then to Sam and Gazella's house for supper. Harry had spent the afternoon in between reading and talking with Abby and Natty, catching up on their lives and dreams. Rose bustled in and out of the kitchen, took a walk to the corner produce market, and spent time in her bedroom, ostensibly to give Harry time with the children. He knew it was to avoid talking. He'd asked her about Abby's doctor visits whenever the girls were not within hearing, but that was rare, and Rose was distracted. While Natty was in the bathroom, he asked Abby how she felt. Rose listened from the kitchen. "I want to go home, Daddy," she answered, sitting on his lap on the couch in the living room. She looked down at her dress. She was 15, almost too big to fit on his lap, but he was careful not to move so she wouldn't think so. "I'm tired of seeing doctors all the time. I'd like to have friends. I don't know anybody here." "I want you to come home too, Abby. You, Natty, and your mother. Why do we have to live here? How come you're not here with us?" "Because Daddy has to work, Abby, and the store is in Brooklyn," said Rose, hurrying in to interrupt the conversation. "I bought some cookies. Why don't you bring them in from the kitchen?" "Harry," said Rose in a hushed voice, dish towel tucked into the belt of her apron, "I don't know when we're going home. Please don't encourage her." "Here are the cookies, Mother. I put them on a plate. Natty might not like them. They're chocolate," said Abby, placing the plate on the cedar chest. Natty had come upon the scene of her mother wearing a tense smile, sitting next to her father. His balding head hung down on his chest, and her sister standing next to them holding a chocolate-covered wafer. Now, beside the train, Harry was wearing the old suit, shirt, and tie he had brought in the carpet bag 2 days before. His old fedora sat toward the back of his head. He pulled it forward as he waved thanks to Izzy. There was no one he needed to look his best for. No one on the train would know him. There was no one waiting for him at the station in Brooklyn. He felt invisible and supernumerary. He had 8 hours to dissect the visit before he reached home. Instead, he slept the sleep of a man exhausted by his emotions, too forlorn to care if or when he awoke.